Conspiracy theories abound in our lives. Some are related to pop culture, whether we ever landed on the moon, while others may be more dramatically tied to our government. Are we always being watched? Are visitors from other planets being housed in Nevada? But as election season ramps up, concerns have grown over how much our viewpoints are being influenced and tampered with. Have Russian bots taken over our social media feeds? Are we getting accurate information from the White House? With me to talk about conspiracies, their origins, and where they sometimes take us is Keith Brown. He's a professor of politics and global studies at ASU. Keith, what do you make of the fact that conspiracy theories seem to be everywhere, even those that seem nearly impossible?
So conspiracy theories have been around for a long time, and they thrive because conspiracies do exist in the world and have existed for a long time. The term has a pejorative feel to it, but I think what it is a variant of the human thirst to make sense of bad things happening in the world, and especially bad things happening to good people, and conversely, good things happening to people that we've decided are bad. And so it's a version of what all of us do, which is tell stories to make sense of the world. When it tips over into conspiracy theory is when the chain of evidence that people are using has holes in it that, for one reason or another, a kind of social group organizes around and just either don't see the holes or find ways to explain the holes. And again, we all do it all the time. It's a kind of human condition to pursue sense. And sometimes we try to do it beyond the tools we have as individuals. We try to do it beyond the tools we have as communities sometimes. And one output is widespread religious beliefs of particular kinds. And that's, I think, one helpful way to think about conspiracy theories, the aspect which they tap into and create and nurture really powerful belief systems that you can't prove, but sometimes the fact that you can't prove them adds to their power.
And how much of a difference has social media made? I think it's one of those things that when we talk about certain negative things, social media is the scourge of all, but it does allow people to spread things faster.
That's right. And this is something that the FBI and other authorities have sort of flagged as part of the issue, both the speed and scale. So it's possible to get a story, a version of the truth out into a large community that have no face-to-face contact. So their only connection might be around a particular story, a particular narrative. And again, we're incredibly ingenious as human beings. We have enormous capacity to make connections, logical, logical connections between phenomena in the world. So basically, every time there's a social media story, it provides a focus for a group of people who aren't necessarily in conversation with folks to say, that's ridiculous. The people who might say that in a bar or in a coffee shop sort of drift out of that conversation. The ones that remain in that conversation will just look for more evidence to back up a story that might have started as just a speculation or a rumor. And so I certainly think amplifying the range, sort of crowdsourcing the intellectual work of justifying a narrative is a couple of the results of social media that we see, which is why I think the phenomenon is attracting so much attention now.
Does it feel as though we've moved from what may have been theories that were considered, let's say, more harmless to those that are more harmful, in the sense that maybe in the past they were more related to pop culture, but in terms of now we have, say, more vaccination situations, we have people concerned about what Facebook or other outlets may be doing, or even in our own government. Does it feel like we're moving to a place that is a little bit more dangerous?
So I think what we're seeing now is the effect of a widespread loss of trust in institutions. And I feel like that has a particularly negative effect, but out of virtuous intentions. Talking with students about the growth of the environmentalist movement in the world, and one of the distinctions that is made in activist circles is the notion of bearing witness versus the notion of direct action. When I was talking with the students, what we were discussing was the fact that to sort of sustain bearing witness as a practice, you have to have faith that there's an agency out there that will act and do the right thing if presented with the correct evidence.
Fear is so powerful, and fear of the unknown is so powerful, that if a germ is there, that it's fairly easy to make it viral because a lot of people just tend to be afraid.
Yeah, I think that's right. We there's fear, and the domain of things to be fearful about seems to get larger every day. I was surprised in a class I'm teaching on global studies. I put into the discussion that we would talk about the coronavirus, and we looked around the room. I'm a social scientist by training. I've got a bunch of talented ASU students, but none of us really knows what the gene sequencing of the coronavirus is.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, when it's possible to find on paper on the internet a paper that looks like it's scientifically vetted and authoritative and tells you that there's something odd about the coronavirus splicing, it's a domain of the unknown for most of us. So our level of scientific literacy and basic understanding of how processes work in the world, each of us as individuals is struggling always for the resources to help us make sense of the world. And as you said, if you've got these communities where at least some of the folks driving the discussions in these communities seem to be invested in ramping up fear rather than reducing it, then it does lead again to a rather volatile situation that we're seeing right now.
Keith Brown is a professor of politics and global studies at ASU.